Welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of just defending positions. Well, you know, something that seems to be true about we humans is we're a lot more clear and vocal about what we don't want than what we do want. Maybe that's because in order to survive, our ancestors had to be hypervigilant about anything that could be harmful, and visioning and designing a future different from our past was relegated to the luxury of leisure time and philosophy. Add to this the programming that we are sinners and that creating a world that works is utopian, and we can see how we've arrived at the brink of a dark dystopian reality. But as the Swami says, we have a choice. If we don't want dystopia, we have to choose datopia, an alternative where we use our intelligence intelligently and our resources more resourcefully. So the question of the day, if not the century, is, how do we turn the ideal into the real deal? How do we cohere a sacred center around the virtues and values our spiritual teachers have extolled for millennia and that science is now confirming as the optimal operating system for evolutionary thrival? Our guest on Wiki Politiki this week, George Cappanelli, is the co-founder of the World I Want Collaboratory to help us design a future worth living into. George is an award-winning author, and he's an expert on individual, organizational, and societal change. He's an internationally known consultant and coach. He's worked with hundreds of the country's leading organizations in both the private and public sectors, including Boeing, NASA, Sun Microsystems, the Disney Company, PepsiCo, the LA Times, and the U.S. Navy. He's also an Emmy Award-winning television producer, director, and co-producer of the new 40-episode Ageless Living television series that's now airing on PBS stations across the country. Oh, he's also an award-winning sculptor. George has also worked as a political consultant, serving as a campaign manager for Jerry Brown in his U.S. Senate bid in California, and is a special consultant in three presidential campaigns. As a result of his involvement in special projects, he's had the opportunity to work with Golda Meir, Lech Walesa, Mother Teresa, and Bishop Desmond Tutu. He and his wife, Sedina, have co-authored 5 award-winning books and are co-founders of Age Nation and a new platform we're going to talk about today, the World I Want Collaboratory. Welcome, George.
Hi, Steve. It's terrific to be with you today.
Okay, well, why don't we jump right in? What was it that sparked this platform called the World I Want Collaboratory?
The mess that we're in, you know. As you just indicated, I've been in and out of politics and consulting in a variety of different environments. And over the years, I have watched a continuous diminishment of over the last 3.5 years, I've watched a lot of that get even more challenging and difficult. And I believe that we don't have a choice, any of us, anymore. If we want a future of some quality, and if we want to preserve the essential elevated values that I believe were introduced in our founding documents, then we got to get off and get back into the game time, because the things that we value, the nation that we value, the way of life, the path toward greater consciousness, all of that, as I see it, is at risk. So that's why we created the World Bond, to give the opportunity to reflect on what they're doing that's meaningful, jettison the things that are limiting and in the way, rethink the things that they value about the life that they're leading, and begin to conceive of a future far more.
I think you're, I hear you coming in and out. Can you hear me, George? I'm not hearing you.
Let's see if I can, even, you know, our landlines as well.
Okay, good. So that's working. I'm sorry, because I wasn't hearing you. You were in and out on this one, so I wasn't sure how that was working. Anyway, so I get that we are in a very extraordinary time, and you know, people need to mobilize in a new way. Who are the people that you're looking to attract through this new platform, George?
Everyone that cares, literally, about their lives, who cares about the future, who care about the opportunities, people who are also dissatisfied with the way this country and a number of other countries around the world are going, people who are concerned about the environment and the fact that some of our leading experts give us a decade or two decades to, at best, to turn the ship before, you know, we hit the shoals. So these are all people, people who care about their children, their grandchildren, and the legacy that they have the opportunity to leave. All of these individuals are people that we hope will come awake from a different level of activism, you know, at this time, whether it's just in their own lives and in their immediate sphere of influence, or whether it's in their personal spiritual work, or whether it's in on the world stage. You know, it's interesting, Steve. I over the last several years, we've seen a lot of demonstrations. You know, we see people demonstrating for healthcare. We see them demonstrating for women's rights and women's consciousness. We see now this huge, long overdue outburst of energy and enthusiasm for Black Lives Matter and the end of racism in America. And it amazes me that I'm so glad to see this level of participation and engagement. But each of these topics are like rooms in a house. And what I don't yet see is people out in the streets and engaged in saving democracy. I didn't see people when the impeachment was going on. I didn't see people flooding the halls of Congress or the offices of Congress members. I didn't see people marching and proclaiming the fact that a democracy was at stake. And that troubles me. It troubles me why we can get excited about a room in the house, but we're not that interested in the house that contains all these rooms.
You know, I think that one of the big issues in this country over many, many years, over our lifetime, I think, is the media's lack of contextualization of really showing how all of these things relate to one another. And if we take the, you know, the Black Lives Matters movement, it's a wonderful and very, very important thing that finally this big issue is being addressed, that people in this country have been cannot help but notice now, you know, and reflect on how Black people have been treated over time. And yet, there's a failure to recognize that bigger than that particular issue is the issue of domination in general, that we've, you know, that in a certain regard, our entire economic system and political systems of the world are based on domination or avoiding domination. And I think that these were the bigger issues that Martin Luther King was trying to air, that were way more dangerous than getting the votes of Black people. And I still see that the media would prefer to keep these awakenings inside the silos. So how does the world I want, how is it engaging with people and bringing people into a bigger context for holding all of these rooms in a much bigger house?
Well, if I could speak to that with certainty, Steve, like Swami Beyondananda, I would be sitting in a cave someplace and there would be a long line of people coming up to talk to me. We're experimenting. That's what a collaboratory is designed to do. You know, collaboratory was a term that was coined by a medical researcher by the name of Wolf, and he was looking for a kind of an open space where people could come together to share ideas, to share their passion and energy, and from that, new understandings, new possibilities could emerge. And that's really what the world I want is designed to be. We don't have a five-step surefire formula to get everybody in America off the couch or out of depression or whatnot. But we do believe that when we gather together, when we speak about things that are really important to us and that we're passionate about, and we can encourage and support and inspire each other, from that, magic can happen. As you and I both know, all of the great movements in history did not begin at the top. They did not begin in areas of government or leadership. It had to bubble up from the hearts and the minds of human beings. And then from there, big things begin to happen. When we have a chance in our conversation today, I'd like to talk to you about what I call the power of one. But initially, to answer your question, we're issuing a call to people to come together, to begin to explore what the as is, to evaluate what they feel and perceive is valuable and not valuable about what the as is, and then to begin to identify some possible solutions, some areas of engagement that they have a natural affinity for. And from there, I think we can do some really wonderful things.
It's interesting that one of the great metaphors that I found very helpful, especially since working with Bruce Lipton on spontaneous evolution, is the caterpillar to butterfly. And what we're seeing right now, metaphorically and literally, is the falling apart of this caterpillar organism and hopefully the coming together of these new cells called imaginal cells, who, yes. That resonates with the word imagination, you know, that we can begin to imagine a new world that we have not really allowed ourselves to look at. As you've begun this beginning of this collaboratory, what have you noticed so far? I know it's very, very early in the process, but in the early, let us know where you are in the process and what you've noticed so far about how people are choosing to engage and what their desires are.
Well, I think, honestly, Steve, it's, as you say, it is very early in the process. We just held our first collaboratory on July 1st, As you know, you played a role in it, and we brought together other wisdom keepers as well to share their insights and their perceptions on what they think is happening at this time, some of what it means, and some of what we can do. The reaction so far to the collaboratory by participants has been very positive. You know, with a very short announcement, we had almost 1,000 people who registered. Because early in the dance, we are doing it more as a webinar model in the first few stages, there wasn't as much of an opportunity for the audience to share perspectives and insights, but those possibilities are going to grow in future meetings where there'll be breakout sessions on different topics and all the rest. So, but I think our experience is what the nation is experiencing at the moment. There is so much overwhelm of both information and the attack on us is so great. And let's talk about that in greater depth in just a few minutes when we can get into it. But it's a good beginning, and I think it mirrors a lot of what's going on in the country today.
Good. Well, we're going to take a very short break here, and we'll be back after this commercial message with our guest, George Capanelli. We're going to be talking about the World I Want Collaboratory. Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki.
The best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, hi, we're back on Wiki Politiki with our guest, George Capanelli, and the World I Want Collaboratory. George, let's expand on what you were just about to say, and also let's talk about this power of one that you mentioned.
Sure. Well, in some ways, Steve, and I know there are a lot of us that recognize it. Our country, our world in general, but our country especially, I think, is in shock. Not just over the coronavirus and whatnot, but there has been a 3.5-year assault in which every single day, there is another way that the things we love, the things we believe in, the things we value are being undercut and wasted. you know, there have been a lot of people who have identified the operating strategy of our current chief executive as exhibiting signs of significant mental impairment. And that kind of a mind is just assaultive, continuously creating turmoil and challenge and upset. And I think people have, they don't know where to look. They don't know what to do. How do you deal with the assault on the economy, the assault on immigration, the assault on human rights, the assaults on, so many different areas of life? So part of the challenge, I think, that exists because people are spinning. They're having to look in so many different directions. It's to slow ourselves down, to remember that the deepest wisdom that we can experience is not going to be found on the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock news. It's not going to be found listening to commentators pontificate. It's going to be found in the wisdom that comes from our hearts. And that requires us to go into the silence, turn down some of the outside noise, and to remember this thing called the power of one. For me, each individual has such an extraordinary capacity to create positive change and influence, but we have to get into our center to do that, you know? And the power of one in a democracy is not just the fact that some of us, unfortunately, can go out and vote every 2 years or 4 years or whatnot, but we can exercise the power of one every single day. First of all, inside of ourselves, in terms of what intention we hold about the future. When you talk about the imaginal self, and you talk about being able to visualize what it is that we want, what it is that's positive, there is no power that I'm aware of to create real change than the power of intention. The higher we hold the frequency and vibration of our intention, and the more we stay with it. There are some people who define that as enlightenment. But there are also practical ways that we can exercise the power of one. We can exercise the power of one in terms of how we spend our money. Do we buy products and services that are made by companies that support humanity, or do we buy products and services because they're convenient, but they're made by people or organizations that aren't at all caring about the well-being of humanity? They're far more caring about their profit margins, how much stock they can buy back, how much control they can exercise. So as consumers, as buyers, we have an enormous amount of influence, and if we would do it with consciousness, we could create great change. We can exercise the power of one in terms of where we place our attention. We can listen to crap coming out of people's mouths and wherever else it comes from that is manipulative and negative and hateful and divisive, or we can listen to things that uplift us, that celebrate life. So there are many, many ways in which we exercise the power of one. But if more of us were doing that all of the time, then more of us, who we contribute money to from a political standpoint, the organizations that we support as nonprofits, these are all incredible powers, and the greater the power of one, then eventually the greater the power of us.
You know, what you bring up is really very important, because so many people over the past generation have been really understanding that this is a fractal evolution that we're going through, that we're evolving as individuals. We're evolving in a certain regard past both religion and non-religion, past the traditional patriarchal religions, and also past scientific materialism, which has no spiritual dimension whatsoever. And in that environment, the power of money, without any kind of moral or social mission for that money, can happen. And that's pretty much what we see right now, that just about every institution of society is run by the power of money. And we've collectively kind of resigned ourselves to that. So what you're talking about is simultaneously an individual transformation and change, where the individuals recognize themselves as part of a larger movement or something bigger that's happening. Is that pretty much what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look at the political landscape, for an example. I mean, anyone who spends any time on the internet and who has ever contributed to any political party or any political candidate get hundreds and hundreds of solicitations for funding from candidates, from action groups, from political parties. And if you think about the billions and billions of dollars that are invested in electing a slate of candidates every 2 years or every 4 years, and you think about what that money could do if it was invested in public support of causes of consequence, to get money out of politics. I mean, if everybody got running for a public office the same amount of money, if everyone had the same period of time in which to familiarize the voter with them, you know, Steve, in Sweden and other countries, elections are 6 weeks long. They're not 3 years long. They don't cost billions of dollars. And if people aren't smart enough or good enough to articulate what their value is in 6 or 8 weeks with a specific amount of money that everybody has, God, our world would be so different if we weren't mired in this muck of billions of dollars. I mean, the average senator in the United States today needs to spend every single day of their 6-year term raising between $25,000 and $50,000 a day. Mm. And that's to be elected in a moderate sized state. You talk about New York, California, Texas, and that number goes way up. So if somebody's got to be raising $25,000 to $50,000 or more a day, where the hell is their attention? Is it on governance? Is it on elevated leadership and noble intentions? Or do they just become like used car salesmen out there shucking and jiving to get people to contribute? And people wonder why politicians are for sale, when in reality, we spend most of our time trying to buy them.
Well, you know, and of course, given who has most of the money and who has been using their leverage, a lot of what you were just talking about, the solicitations we get daily, if not hourly, from some political candidate or another, it's kind of a form of extortion. Because it's like, you know, and usually I'm on, you know, I get emails from all sides. So it's one side will hold up the boogeyman of Donald Trump. The other hand side will hold up the boogeyman of Obama or Nancy Pelosi, and use that that distorted the boogeyman to essentially blackmail people into donating money to their political party, when the entire system needs to be impeached. So I'm going to ask you something. This has been puzzling to me. It's that if you look at Paul Hawkins' book a number of years ago, Blessed Unrest, identified, I think it was 250,000 well-meaning organizations, all nonprofits, all looking to heal one aspect of our dysfunctional system. What if those efforts were aggregated into one effort to change the relationship between money and politics, and not just create a more level playing field, but actually up-level the playing field to where we're actually looking at what is it that benefits the Commonwealth and not just the uncommonly wealthy. So perhaps that can become an important conversation in relation to the world I want. Have you found this is something I found, and maybe you have different experience, that it's a lot easier to get people engaged in complaining about what they don't want than in actually allowing themselves to speak the truth of what they want? And if so, what have you found as a way to get people to shift from pushing against what they don't want to pulling for what they do?
Well, over the course of my career, what I have always found is that getting people out of their heads and into their hearts, getting people engaged in actual experiential interaction with each other rather than talking about things. I mean, if talk was going to cure anything, the world would have been whole a long time ago. But conversation and chat alone, talking, doesn't get you there, because the mind may be engaged, but the body and the heart are not. There's a philosophy, a spiritual philosophy, that suggests that one should never go faster than feeling can follow. And the truth of the matter is, most of us in this world spend the majority of our time in what my wife Sabina calls the top office, which is the head, and nowhere near as much time in the heart. When you speak through the intelligence of the heart, connectivity and consciousness become possible. We in our time have gotten way off track, in my opinion, and we worship information as if information were intelligence. We've lost the ability to discern between wisdom and information and intelligence. And so for me, the best thing we can do is to keep coming back to the heart. And that's not some la-di-da bullshit kind of hope of a romantic. It's a practical thing, because as you know, HeartMath and other organizations have demonstrated that there is a cluster of 40,000 cells in the heart that constitutes a second center of intelligence. And so the more we center in the heart, the more we are talking about a whole kind of wisdom connected to previous generations going ahead into the future. It's the place where we can act from with the greatest degree of integrity, alignment, and consciousness. And so what we are going to be doing going forward in the world that I want is creating as many opportunities as possible for people to get out of their heads, to get into their hearts, to use that basic intelligence, and then to use the mind as a tool, as an implement to accomplish the things that need to be accomplished, not to use the mind as the center of all decision-making and all focus.
You know, that's what we've had. We've actually had a society that is so based on mental structures, on scientific materialism, on reductionism, that and on mental structures and other structures that we have forgotten the essence. And if you look at the, you know, the quest for artificial intelligence, I think it's circumvented real intelligence, the intelligence of nature, the intelligence of the intuitive self. And right now, in looking at the environmental disasters that we've created, the political disasters, and the economic disasters, that's not been a result of too much love. It's been a result of too much mental structures trying to control things that are not controllable, while the things that we can control, as you suggested earlier, our individual behaviors, our individual how we interpret things, and what we focus our intention on, those are the kinds of things that can be controlled. So I appreciate, you know, the essence of using this new platform, The World I Want, to help people make that journey from the head to the heart. Or Swami says, when things come to a head, I say, let's head for the heart. You know, so when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of your other work and how that informs what we're doing right now. This is Steve Bremen. We're on Wiki Politiki. Our guest is George Capanelli, and we're talking about the World I Want Collaboratory. Back soon.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, we're back. We're back on Wiki Politiki with George Capanelli. George, I've known you, it seems to be like 15 or 20 years. And throughout that whole time, your focus has been on age nation and now ageless living. Tell us about ageless living and how you developed this focus on working with helping older people continue to grow in their lives.
Well, actually, Steve, ageless living has a dual focus, and that is to give information, inspiration, education, and practical strategies and solutions to people who are what we call in the second half of life. We refer to them as people who weren't born yesterday. But we also bring together young and older people, because we believe that it is only by bridging the gap between generations and recognizing that we have a lot more in common than we do that differentiates us, I think that we're going to find solutions. But my wife, Sadina, and I began Age Nation after making passages, late in life and end of life passages, with both sets of our parents. We realized during that time how unprepared we were to become guides and caretakers for our parents. We understood how unprepared they were for the journey into late in life. In their case, they had done some of the financial things that they needed to support their lives, but I'm talking about emotionally and spiritually and intellectually prepare. And what else was a shock to us was how unprepared we were as a nation to care for our elders, to honor them, to keep them integrated into life, to learn from them. And so that's why we created Age Nation. And for a number of years, through our books, our radio programs, our conferences and global digital summits and all kinds of things that we did, we were reaching a significant number of people in our demographics. But I have a strong background in media. I owned and ran a film and television production company in New York for a number of years. Sadina has been both in front of the camera as an actor and actress and spokesperson, and also behind the camera and in theaters as a producer. So we returned to media, and Ageless Living, or the Ageless Living series, grew out of an idea to bring wisdom keepers of our time who speak to critical topics of relevance, but also are speaking about ways to move us into the new story, into the future, out of the kind of dystopian confusion that we're living in, and into a new story. Greg Braden, Bruce Lipton, Anita Morjani, Larry Dossey, Thomas Moore, David Suzuki, you know, people of real relevance and content who not only inspire us, but give us things that we can do in our lives that make a difference. And so we have created a 40-episode television series called Ageless Living. It's currently airing on a number of stations, PBS stations, around the country. People can consult their local PBS guide and see if Ageless Living is airing. And if by some chance it's not, just call your local PBS station and say, you've heard great things about Ageless Living, and when are they going to air it? Because it's really, really worth it. I mean, I'm speaking as a co-producer and director of the series, but I'm not just saying that. I sit down in awe, truthfully, at the grace and the good synergy and whatnot that allowed all of these people to come together and share their wisdom that now is available in this 40-episode library that is literally ageless. I mean, as you know, Steve, wisdom doesn't have a timeline. Wisdom doesn't have a shelf date on it. Wisdom is just wisdom, and when you hear it, you know it. So that's how we got into Ageless Living and Age Nation, and it's some of what we do.
You know, I'm inspired and impressed that you went to PBS, because generally National Public Radio, public broadcasting, other than PBS doing Wayne Dyer, he aired quite a bit on PBS over the years. But they've stayed away from kind of personal growthy, new sciencey things like Greg Braden and Bruce Lipton. So I think that that is a breakthrough in reaching a new audience. Did you find the receptivity or any pushback on the kinds of guests you were offering?
Well, because of my background and credentials as a television producer and director, we elected to do this series as an independent production. We had a mm-hmm. choice of co-producing it with PBS, with New Mexico PBS, because that's our partner station as a presenting station and as a distributor of the series to the PBS network. But it was clear that if we did that, then we would need to go through a lot of what you're talking about. We would have to propose authors. They would have to be considered. And we were looking to bring the best people that we knew and the best people in various topics together, regardless of what category somebody else put them in. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we have Bruce and Greg and Lynn Twist and really extraordinary hearts and minds. And it's why this series is so inspirational and motivational. Wayne was on PBS a lot. In fact, Wayne is reputed to have helped PBS through pledge drives raise a great deal of money for PBS. And interestingly enough, although in regular programming, PBS does not include as many of the kind of new thought people as we have in the series. They do use a lot of them mm-hmm. in pledge drives because people respond so well to them.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very inspiring because it does expose people to this new science. And right now we're in the throes of a conflict. It's not just the Donald Trump conflict. It's the conflict between a medical system that's based on reductionism, that's based on mechanics, that's very Newtonian. And we are in an Einsteinian world. We're in a quantum world. We're in a world of relationship. We're in a world of field. And this is a medicine that's simply trying to move the little iron particles around without recognizing the power of the magnetic field. So we are at a time when there is really a changing of the guard, a changing of the paradigms. And perhaps that's, you know, I look at the Trump phenomenon. I look at him as America's balloon karma payment, that we've been earning this quote around earning since you and I were kids, since the end of World War II, and when we adopted when we brought the Nazi scientists in as part of Operation Paperclip, and we somehow imagined that we could. No, we're not selling our souls to the devil. We're just renting it, you know. And so we've had this this kind of toxic underbelly for a long time, and I think that these apocalyptic times, the veils are being lifted on all of these things. And so what we see right now is this tremendous polarization that we have people living in literally alternative realities. Do you see that the world that I want? Do you see this, and the platforms that you're working on? You know, is bringing people to kind of a unitary view of that integrates, these opposites and uses them as a dynamic duo dance partner. Do you see that? How do you see that integration taking place, or is that too far in the future?
No, I don't think it can be too far in the future, Steve, because if it is, Homo sapiens are going to disappear. We have a very limited time. And I don't know that it's so much a bringing things together as it is ushering in
the new story, ushering in the new normal, because it's clear to an increasing number of us that the old systems are failing us. They have failed us. The only reason they're still standing is there's a relatively small but tenacious group that is holding on, walking backward into the future, believing that if they're tenacious enough, somehow what used to be will become again. And that's becoming more and more futile. So the best thing we can do is keep putting out the most elevated, conscious, uplifting, inspiring, and yet practical set of solutions and recommendations as possible. That is what we feel our job is. And we're not going to individually, Sadina and I are not going to change the entire world, but we can do our part. And if each of us does, we can look for a future that's a hell of a lot brighter than the past.
If you could, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know you've thought about this. How would you, in a couple of sentences, how would you characterize this new future, this new worldview, this new organizing principle for our species?
I see it as being egalitarian. I see it as being self-inspiring and self-empowering. I see it as an climate in which each individual is invited to explore the scope and the range of their magnificence, their skills, their abilities. It's a place or a time, an environment in which we get to heal our wounds and, more than anything else, live a life that is integrous, aligned with the greater good, with the natural law, and in keeping with the wisdom of the heart.
Excellent. Excellent. I think that's really true. And yes, you mentioned earlier, we got plenty of information. Now what we need is wisdom. So, I mean, you've had a long and varied career in media. You've been at it for, since the 60s, really. What is it now that you see in the midst of what you described, the chaotic situation that you described, or we would call it a situation, in the light of the current situation? What is it that gives you hope and inspiration right now?
I just see this new story bubbling up in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different areas. I see an enormous amount of passion and intelligence and wisdom in the Gen Xers and the Gen Zs and the millennials. I see more older people waking up to the reality. And so I think this is a time in which we can afford to have great optimism, but we also need great courage, and we cannot sit on the damn sidelines. We have to get into the game and do the things we're called to do to make this transition possible.
That seems to be the case. And have you found, it sounds like you've found that the younger people who are really going to be inheriting this and having to live into this future 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years from now, and to make sure that future exists. What has been the, I know because you've been doing the Age Nation thing for a while, and you've seen audiences, you've worked with live audiences, what do you see the response has been by younger people, by the millennials and the Gen Xers and so on, and Gen Zers?
Well, I think there's a great deal of skepticism, because those of us who are older have been at the helm and have allowed a lot of these catastrophes to take shape and to happen. So I think we need to earn their respect. We need to support. When you have things like Parkland and you have the Gretas of the world emerge, we can't let them speak in isolation. We need to move forward and in recognition and support. But also, younger people have to realize that just because a digital revolution happened and older people may not be as savvy or sophisticated in technology, technology is not intelligence. Technology is just a tool. So younger people need to be receptive and own that, and older people need to honor and participate and support younger people. That, for me, is part of the answer.
You know, there seems to be so few venues where older people and younger people can get together, and where there can be a mentorship and communication and mutual appreciation. How do you see that happening? Oh, boy, we're at the end of our time, George. I'm so sorry. But do you see that that's something that's going to be happening through The World That I Want?
Yes, and also through some other things called For the Love of Your Life that we're about to launch. So it is possible. It needs to be experiential.
Thank you. Thank you, George Cappinelli, for the work that you're doing and the play that you're doing. This is Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki, and we're back again next week. Thank you.